The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Feeling the Squeeze. As new homes keep popping up, Southwest Wake is running out of space. And the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Rapid Growth, Rapid Problems. Southwest Wake County transformed from pastures to pavement, looks to make the most of its explosive growth. Written by Kaylee Thompson. Apex Planning Director Diane Kinn can remember when the town had a community workshop in 1999 looking for input on what to seek in developments. I had a person come up and say, I just want to be able to buy socks somewhere besides Cary, Kinn says. We had grocery stores and a couple of restaurants, and that's all there was back then. Grocery stores, a couple of restaurants, and lots of homes was what Southwest Wake County used to look like. Driving through it meant seeing mostly fields and cows. It wasn't where you went for jobs, much less entertainment. They were on-the-way places. Now that's changed. The towns of Apex, Cary, Fuquay, Verena, Holly Springs, and Morrisville have shifted from being bedroom communities to becoming live-work-play areas with a surging commercial tax base. And the rising population and the business that has followed has brought the challenge of maintaining that small-town feel. While each town has its own unique challenges, all of them are facing infrastructure, land, and affordability issues. Setting aside money for affordable housing, requiring developers to have a certain percentage of affordable units, and building affordability into zoning ordinances are some of the ways the towns are taking action. Strategic planning and adopting comprehensive plans that look 20 years into the future are helping the towns be prepared, infrastructure-wise, for when major growth occurs. Annexing land, building denser developments, and expanding roadways have been some of the choices towns have made to handle the lack of land. We just have to be mindful about where growth can take place and how do we strategically recruit the businesses that we need, the industries that we need in our community to support our tax base, Fuquay Verena Economic Development Director Tiffany McNeil says. Much like many of our neighbors, we're looking for industrial sites and available buildings. We're trying to grow our downtown with infill development and available inventory. We're in need of more available inventory. Businesses follow rooftops. The five towns that make up Southwest Wake County used to be mainly where people lived. They would commute to Raleigh, Durham, or Chapel Hill for work while enjoying the open space and small-town charm that each town had to offer. Working and routine errands, even such as buying socks, meant driving at least 20 minutes away. Apex, for example, had a population of just 5,476 in 1990, and Holly Springs was a mere 1,375, according to U.S. Census data. But with steady growth and larger companies moving into these towns, the sleepy town days are gone. Southwest Wake County had just 93,000 square feet of commercial, retail, and office space under construction in the first quarter of 2013, according to Triangle Business Journal space data. And both of those were in Cary. By 2018, there were more than 1 million square feet of office, retail, and flex space under construction and spread out among all of the towns except for Fuquay Verena. Some of those were the Perimeter Park office buildings in Morrisville, retail shopping at Amberley and Cary, and the Town Hall Commons office space in Holly Springs. Construction of commercial space has slowed with just a little more than 500,000 square feet under construction for the first quarter of 2023, according to TBJ space data. While with this exponential growth, both in population and businesses, towns have had to be more selective about what development projects they approve and if any adjustments or conditions need to be made. For Apex, that has meant targeting certain sectors and bigger companies, along with focusing on growing its small business sector and doing what it can to give small businesses a leg up. In addition, once it has snagged a developer for a certain sector, it works closely to ensure the project is what the town needs. We might work with them to suggest certain kinds of building or facility configuration. For example, we know that a lot of companies require at least 26 to 30-foot ceilings, and they need 40 by 40 basings where they need at least 100,000 square feet. Apex Economic Development Director Joanna Helm says, we really work with them to say, Here are the kinds of inquiries we're getting in this market. If you're going to build a speculative building, then here are some basic construction qualities that maybe you should look at doing. So that's an intentional strategy, is making sure we have product on the ground. Holly Springs also targeted certain industries, specifically life sciences, and within that, biomanufacturing. Holly Springs has seen a major life sciences development since CSL Seqirus first came in 2009. The company completed a $156 million expansion last June, proving its commitment to the area. Economic Development Director Irina Kristanovich says the town was ready for the big life sciences developments they've seen come their way. Amgen, Fujifilm Diosynth, and the Yield Life Sciences campus are just a few. By planning utilities and having residential growth that could support it. Fuquay Varina, meanwhile, has tackled it from the other side by identifying land and sites for certain sectors in order to achieve the tax base split it wants. The town is currently 78% residential and 22% commercial, and McNeil said the town is seeking to recruit more retail to help achieve the desired balance of 60-40. That balance helps the town continue to provide services as the commercial businesses generate tax revenue that support the community. Cary has mainly had to focus on density and allowing for more commercial development to help build its commercial tax base. Morrisville, however, has had to focus on bringing in more residential development. Morrisville has long been known as a life sciences hub with several industrial warehouses and life sciences spaces built over the years. Much of this is attributed to the town's close proximity to Research Triangle Park. Its current tax base is 44% residential and 56% commercial, according to Wake County data. In 2010, it was reversed. But over the past 12 years, more and more commercial space is open. The town is working on raising the residential percentage and has developed a plan to attract more residential development. Rose Cornelius, Morrisville Chamber of Commerce president, says part of the key for Morrisville is to attract more retail and a variety of businesses, as 47% of the town's population is Asian and Indian. The town wants to ensure the Asian and Indian community feels welcome and supported, especially in their small businesses. In addition, the town works closely with the Wake County Economic Development Team to see what kind of projects are looking for a location and what the town can do to be attractive to those types of developments and industries. Deputy Town Manager of Morrisville, Brandon Zudema, says we've already talked about in the context of adding roadways and adding infrastructure and making it more attractive for those folks who might want to move here, so that we have some of the amenities they're looking for before they get here, as opposed to trying to do it after they're already here or are looking here. Small town charm. While allowing for more commercial growth and big companies to come in, this has meant these towns risk losing their small town charm. Each community has made efforts to maintain that vibe, the reason for why a lot of people moved there in the first place. Apex has switched its mantra to having small town character rather than trying to remain categorized as a small town. It provides facade grants to businesses downtown to allow them to update their buildings and swap out modern features for historically accurate ones. Ken says the town has even gone so far as to create a small town overlay district, which is most of the land inside the Apex Peakway. Much of what Apex does to maintain small town character is in its zoning laws and ordinances. For Fuquay Varina, Assistant Town Manager Jim Seymour says it's about preserving the community's heritage and historic presence. With that mindset, Fuquay Varina has given a National Historic District designation that encompasses 36 buildings and one site downtown. How do we incorporate that historic designation in more of the commercial elements? So those that are coming to town or to visit, or those that are living here, they may end up coming downtown to the Mineral Spring, walking around downtown, Seymour says. It's really just making sure that every plan and program you have going forward, you understand and incorporate the historic context of the community in order to highlight that. Holly Springs' idea for maintaining a small town feel is to ensure there is a park amenity within a 10-minute walk of anywhere in Holly Springs. Assistant Town Manager Daniel Weeks said there is a 56-acre park underway on Cass Holt Road and a 3-mile greenway called Middle Creek Greenway that will connect Holly Springs Road and Sunset Lake Road. Morrisville doesn't have a downtown area, so it's creating one. The town currently has a plan to develop Morrisville Town Center, which will encompass 25 acres and create a central downtown area for the town. Maintaining a small town atmosphere, however, is one of the smallest challenges the towns have faced. Infrastructure, lack of land, and affordability are some of the biggest challenges the towns are dealing with, and making a plan to address those challenges in the coming years. Challenges ahead. A constant issue facing the towns is being able to provide the necessary infrastructure and services needed when more people and businesses move in. Providing water and sewer services to the different areas that have an increased need has been a struggle for many. All but Cary have experienced a 60% or more increase in population since 2010, according to U.S. Census data. More people and businesses moving in means the current water and sewer systems don't have the capacity to handle the higher flow. This means larger lines need to be laid in addition to building more wastewater treatment plants and sewer lift and pump stations. Fuquay, Varina, and Mooresville have seen the biggest jump in their population since 2010, with an 80.2% and 70.8% increase, respectively, according to census data. Seymour says Fuquay, Varina recently adopted its 2040 land use plan, which addresses ensuring the town is prepared to handle all the growth that is coming their way. The plan addresses the road network, traffic management, and public utilities, which enable the town to continue to provide the services to residents that they're already providing. Zudima says expanding Mooresville's roadways and extending roads to add alternate routes through town has been key to making land more available and access to that land more efficient. This includes the extension of McCrimmon Parkway, Mooresville Carpenter Road, and a handful of road projects along NC Highway 54, where it is partnering with the NC Department of Transportation. Cary and Mooresville are both experiencing a lack of land for new development. Cary only has about 7,000 acres of its more than 52,000 left to develop. Meanwhile, Mooresville is landlocked and rapidly running out of room, as it's only about 6,000 acres total. In addition to making land more accessible through expanded roadways, the town of Mooresville is looking at growing upward, since it can't really grow outward. Density is the name of the game in some of these smaller towns who are running out of room. Zudema says the planning department has continuously evaluated the town's unified development ordinance and made any changes necessary to ensure it's attracting the industries that are coming to the area to build. On the forefront of each town's mind is affordability. Cary has started setting aside money each year for affordable housing and has one affordable housing project planned. Kin says Apex has been tackling affordability on several levels, from adopting an affordable housing plan to establishing a housing advisory board to zoning conditions for developers. It also has two affordable housing projects underway. Having a wide range of housing types is how Fuquay, Varina has been addressing affordability, according to Seymour. When developers are building on large tracts of land, about 100 acres, the town works with the developer to offer a variety of housing options. That variety has included multifamily, townhomes, cottage courts, and single-family homes. Weeks said Holly Springs is always looking for partners to develop affordable housing in the town, along with housing diversity. That's really our mission, is to provide a diversity of housing for people that want to live in Holly Springs at all ages, Week says. Zudema says the town council has been looking at what it can start doing to ensure it's supporting those who serve the community, such as teachers, firefighters, police officers, and nurses, and making it so they can afford to live in the community they work in. Cornelius said that people with lower incomes are being pushed to the outskirts of the community in order to afford to live there. This is exacerbated by the fact that mass transportation is not readily available, especially for people who live on the edges of town. While each town is rapidly growing, the challenges and how each town addresses them going forward is unique. There is no one-size-fits-all solution to the changes Southwest Wake County is facing. Most have prepared for the challenges, tackling infrastructure and lack of land and comprehensive plans. However, it remains to be seen if the towns will be able to maintain a small town feel and whether they'll become so unaffordable that service industry workers won't be able to afford to live there. All of our communities are facing the problem of, we only have a limited amount of land left, so what needs to be here? Because businesses are clamoring to get here, that's not even the issue, Cornelius says. But what needs to go? What's a good fit for our community? What does our community need to complement what is already going on? It's a new era with new challenges, but so much has changed. Apex even has a Target now with plenty of socks. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Nash County firm rolls into D.C. A White House tradition that dates to the 1870s will continue to have North Carolina flavor as an egg company based in Nash County takes the lead. This year, Braswell Family Farms will provide around 30,000 eggs, up from 18,000 last year. Providing the eggs is an intense process. The eggs are transported to the stocked pot in Winston-Salem to be hard-boiled and dyed to the exact colors required by the White House. It's not as easy as taking a load of eggs and dropping them off, says Trey Braswell, the president of Braswell Family Farms. The company has been involved since 1997 after it purchased a Virginia egg operation. The commitment by Braswell Family Farms, which is based in Nashville, has steadily grown. It's an extensive and expensive process, but we feel honored as egg farmers to do our civic duty, Braswell says. Braswell Family Farms is a big operation with 225 employees and selling 60 million dozen eggs a year. Eggs have traditionally been cheap, but that changed in the past year as supply chain issues and the avian flu impacted production. Braswell says his company was able to keep its birds free of the avian flu, but costs for soybean, corn, and paper products all rose significantly. Still, Braswell is thrilled to be part of the White House Easter egg roll, which is April 10. It's a donation, Braswell says. And as you know, eggs are expensive this year, so it's a large donation. Wolfpack grad gets shot at the moon. Around the NC State University campus, you'll see banners with the motto, Think and Do. And it's hard to imagine someone exemplifying that more than astronaut Christina Koch. She went to high school in Jacksonville and then got a BS in electrical engineering and physics and a Master of Science degree in electrical engineering. At NC State, she took a rock climbing class, and the physical and mental challenge of the class helped her NASA career. She once said of being selected as an astronaut, "We talked more about rock climbing in my astronaut interview than we ever did about engineering." Number two is number one again in North Carolina. It's a familiar winner from the North Carolina Golf Panel, as Pinehurst No. 2 was once again rated the best golf course in the state. The Donald Ross course will host the U.S. Open again in 2024. The Grandfather Golf and Country Club in Linville came in at number two. The Dogwood course at the Country Club of North Carolina and Pine Needles Lodge and Golf Club flipped the third and fourth positions, as 16 courses from the Sandhills were in the top 100. In the Triangle, the top-ranked clubs were Old Chatham Golf Club in Durham at number 17, with Raleigh Country Club at number 19, McGregor Downs Country Club in Cary at number 20, and Governor's Club in Chapel Hill at number 26. Project opens new amenity center. Amenities are the name of the game now, and a Boston real estate firm has opened a 9,000-square-foot facility to serve tenants at East Ridge at Perimeter Park in Mooresville. King Street Properties opened what it is calling The Shed on April 4. The collaborative space includes private meeting rooms, a training center, dining options, a fitness center, yoga studio, indoor and outdoor lounge, and golf simulator. King Street acquired East Ridge, a park with 479,000 square feet of flex, office and life sciences space near Research Triangle Park, for $75.6 million in October 2020 in a partnership purchase with Nuveen Real Estate. Dick's Park finds a hit in Dreamville. The massive Dreamville Festival, which brought 50,000 fans per night to Raleigh, is showcasing the potential of Dorothea Dix Park. This year's Dreamville Festival, held April 1st and 2nd, had a dramatic impact, from traffic on Western Boulevard to sold-out hotels and music that wafted well past 5 points. The event was held the third held by North Carolina rapper J. Cole. It featured big names such as Drake, Lil Wayne, and Usher, as well as many local ties. Drake wore a jersey with a large bulldog during his Sunday night performance, paying homage to J. Cole's high school, the Terry Sanford Bulldogs in Fayetteville. Dix Park remains a long-term work in progress, but it shows it could help Raleigh be something it has never been before. Hip. And finally, NC State looks to fill key dean slot. Three finalists interviewed in late March to fill a long-standing vacancy at the top of one of NC State University's largest schools. The university began last year searching for a replacement for Rich Linton, who in February 2022 left his role leading the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences to become president of Kansas State University. After an initial search didn't lead to a hire, the university relaunched the effort last fall. The three finalists interviewed last month include Todd Armstrong, vice president at Fibro Animal Health, Gary Fox, head of the university's Department of Biological and Agricultural Engineering, And Diane Rowland, Dean of the College of Natural Sciences, Forestry and Agriculture at the University of Maine. The dean will oversee a school with about 3,600 students. And now we turn to some of the main stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by Evan Hoopfer. New film studio to bring Hollywood vibe to eastern North Carolina. Construction has kicked off on what will be the largest film studio in North Carolina. Ascent Studios will be located in the Nash County town of Spring Hope, about 35 minutes east of Raleigh. The studio will span more than 200 acres at 556 Barbie Street and feature five production stages totaling 170,000 square feet. The land also has exterior shots for fields, forests, roads, barns, lakes, and manors. We believe that Ascent Studios will become a major player in the film industry, not just in North Carolina, but throughout the country, says Devin Keaton, a filmmaker partnering on Ascent Studios. Fellow filmmaker Robert Ripberger and Nathan Edwards of the construction firm Edwards Incorporated out of Spring Hope make up the other partners in the project. Edwards Incorporated is the firm building the studio. Ripberger says the project is being funded by him, Keaton, and Edwards. No outside investors are part of the project, he says. Ripberger declined to share an investment cost for the studio. He says the idea to build a film studio in Nash County came from Keaton, who lives in Spring Hope. For years, Keaton had been pestering Ripberger to come and see what Spring Hope has to offer, and Ripberger came to visit to produce a film. We said, okay, what if this is something much bigger? Ripberger says. We'd love to train locals and build jobs. If we're going to build that infrastructure for one film, why not keep it for other projects that filmmakers could utilize? Ascent Studios is scheduled to complete construction in late 2023. Ripberger says the goal is to eventually have between 10 to 12 productions a year at the studio, and it could host production for movies or TV shows. States outside of California have long sought to garner the interest of the film industry, North Carolina included. The state offers a 25% tax credit on all labor and equipment, which is paid back as a grant after a film is completed. There's also a bill in the General Assembly that would give an additional 10% in tax credits for film shot in Tier 1 or Tier 2 counties, which would mean film shot in Nash County could receive 35% tax credit if the bill becomes law. Struggling Bioventus replaces CEO. Reality led the Durham company through an IPO. This article is written by Zach Ezone. The CEO of a Durham healthcare company has been fired amid a challenging time for the firm. Bioventus announced April 5 that Ken Reality has stepped down after 3 years leading the company. The move came days after Bioventus reversed course on a major acquisition as it struggled to finance the deal. The company's stock has fallen more than 90% in the last year, closing at $1.10 on April 4. The board of directors on April 3rd informed Reality that he would transition from his role as CEO. On April 4, Reality resigned as a director and officer of Bioventus, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Bioventus has appointed Anthony Bill as interim CEO as it begins the search for a permanent appointment. Bill previously led the company from 2013 through 2020 when he retired. We are urgently looking to address our performance and execution, unlock long-term value, and deliver on the expectations of our shareholders, says William Hawkins, Bioventus's executive chairman. As we search for a permanent successor, we believe Tony is uniquely positioned as an interim CEO to lead Bioventus through this transition, given his previous experience, tenure, and success at the company. Reality is in line to receive severance benefits that include annual base salary payments for 18 months and 150% of his target annual bonus for 2023 paid in equal installments over the same period, according to the securities filing. Reality's exit is being treated as a termination without cause, according to a separation agreement filed with the SEC. During Reality's time leading the company, Bioventus completed an IPO and numerous acquisitions aimed at accelerating the company's growth. But the recent deal to acquire CardiHeal for up to $450 million fell apart after Bioventus couldn't settle on how to finance it. Short on capital to fund payments, Bioventus in February entered a settlement agreement that would transfer ownership of CardiHeal back to its former shareholders to eliminate Bioventus's $350 million of deferred purchase price obligations. Bioventus had 30 days to evaluate its options to pay the remaining amount it owed in the deal. In late March, the company said it couldn't secure financing within the 30-day window. Amid financial challenges, Bioventus last year announced a restructuring process intended to generate about $9 million to $10 million in annual savings. And our next article, written by Lauren Onisorge, North Carolina dealerships sue Ford over costly EV program. Dozens of car dealerships across North Carolina have filed a joint lawsuit against Ford Motor Company over its new electric vehicle program. The dealerships, including Raleigh's Capital Ford and Crossroads Ford of Wake Forest, claim Ford is shifting the cost of its Blue Oval charging network onto dealers by requiring them to buy millions of dollars worth of expensive chargers, regardless of whether they need them to sell and service EVs. The complaint was initially filed March 7 within the North Carolina Division of Motor Vehicles and later transferred to federal court. Ford did not immediately respond to a request to comment. The EV market segment is growing quickly, which is why the dealerships claim that a December 2022 notice by Ford that it would be requiring dealers to comply with unlawful requirements in order to continue selling EVs was such a concern, the lawsuit says. Ford will only allocate EVs to certified elite dealers, and the sole entry and exit point for consumer purchases will be the Ford.com e-commerce platform, according to the lawsuit. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Banking page, written by Lauren Onisorge. Funds will target rising entrepreneurs, black founders often underrepresented in accessing capital. Rodney Sampson, an investor, founder, and startup advocate, knows the challenges of being a black entrepreneur firsthand. 23 years ago, I was that founder raising venture capital, he says. It took dozens of meetings, but he got lucky raising capital for his startup, Atlanta-based Multicast Media Technologies, which was ultimately acquired by Kit Digital 10 years after its inception. But not everyone can get through the funding barrier. Historically, less than 2% of venture capital dollars go to black entrepreneurs. When adverse market conditions led to a 36% drop in overall VC dollars last year, they were disproportionately hit. Black entrepreneurs saw a 45% decrease in financing, according to Crunchbase. Enter in a new program that prioritizes funding for underrepresented groups in North Carolina. The North Carolina Rural Center is inviting potential partners to apply to help distribute up to $50 million to support early-stage, high-growth small businesses. Called the NC Venture Capital Program, it's part of NC Invest, a $202 million federal funding infusion granted to the Rural Center by the North Carolina General Assembly to support small businesses. At the helm of the program is Venture Capital Fund of Funds Manager. At the helm of the program as Venture Capital Fund of Funds Manager is Sampson, who calls it a game-changing model for equitable opportunity in our nation's startup ecosystem. Applications are due May 5 for first-round venture partners, and the priority is on investment firms with a history of backing businesses representing underrepresented groups. It's a fund-to-fund initiative, meaning it won't make direct investments. Instead, money is funneled into venture funds, and then then we're trusting those funds to do what they do and invest in founders, he says. Community bankers say they're not losing to big banks. The Triangle's community banks say they're bucking a trend seen nationwide where, in the wake of bank failures, deposits are flowing towards so-called too-big-to-fail institutions. New Federal Reserve data show the 25 biggest U.S. banks snagged $120 billion in new deposits after Silicon Valley Bank fell. Smaller banks lost a combined $108 billion over the same time period. In the Triangle, however, community bankers insist the opposite is happening. Ron Day, CEO of Rocky Mount-based First Carolina Bank, says, "We have actually picked up a few commercial deposit relationships from Signature Bank and believe there could be more opportunity there." Ted Whitehurst, CEO of Rocky Mount-based Providence Bank, says, "We're doing great. Our deposits are up for the month," he says. Jim Sills, CEO of M&F Bank in Durham, says his firm's deposit base, too, is stable with normal deposit inflows and outflows. Sills attributes much of the deposit outflows being reported to large-scale regional banks recently perceived to be in trouble. And finally, Venture South, undeterred by recession talk. An early-stage venture firm in South Carolina with a history of triangle deals expects to fund more startups this year, downturn or no downturn. That's according to Paul Clark, managing director of Greenville's Venture South, a prolific investor in local startups such as CureMint, Babies, Planted, Reveal Mobile, and Spiffy. Clark says Venture South is pushing forward with planning future investments, including in the Triangle, where he visits about once a month as the firm continues to scout for portfolio companies. There's still lots of good entrepreneurs trying to raise money. If you cut through all the noise and distractions, he says, there's still lots of people who want funding. And now we turn to the page written by Evan Hoopfer on Greater Triangle Growth. Franklin County tops the triangle in growth. The county is now outpacing Johnston in population increase. Move over, Johnston County. There's a new fastest-growing suburb in the triangle. Franklin County expanded its population by 3.8% between 2021 and 2022, according to new population estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau. That makes Franklin the fastest-growing county in the Greater Triangle and the fourth fastest overall in North Carolina. Franklin takes the top spot from Johnston County, which was the fastest-growing county in all of North Carolina in the 2020 census. Johnston County is still red-hot from a growth perspective. The county grew its population by 3.3% during the one-year interval, and it's three times as large as Franklin, so its actual gain of residents was much higher for the year at 7,500 compared to 2,700 for Franklin. Other suburbs in the Greater Triangle are growing at a staggering rate, too. Together, the counties of Franklin, Johnston, Moore, Harnett, Chatham, Lee, Granville, and Nash added a combined 17,600 residents between 2021 and 2022. The growth of the halo counties of the Greater Triangle in part reflects the rising home and land prices in Wake and Durham counties. Franklin County has been consistently experiencing increased growth in the last 5 years, Franklin County Manager Kim Denton says. The county has grown because of the availability of new housing, revitalized downtowns, and infrastructure improvements. She added that the county is making investments in its water and sewer infrastructure, public safety, and transportation. The county is preparing for this level of growth to continue, Denton says. Flight school scraps expansion over feud with airport. A flight school that was planning a big expansion in Johnston County is scrapping its plans, saying that Johnston Regional Airport cannot support the additional growth. This is the latest incident in what has been a strained relationship between Blue Line Aviation and Johnston Regional Airport, and it comes after the company announced in October plans to expand at the airport. We're disappointed that the dispute with the Johnston County Airport has led to mistreatment of our company, which is a tremendous asset to the community, says Trey Walters, founder of Blue Line. Blue Line Aviation is a flight school that trains prospective pilots who can then go on to fly for airlines. In October, the company unveiled plans to build a residential dormitory, hotel, classroom office space, and a flex industrial office space on 14 acres along Swift Creek Road. But this scrapped expansion is the latest chapter in a feud between Blue Line Aviation and Johnston Regional Airport. Blue Line Aviation sued the airport in 2021 over access to an apron at the airport, and then the company accused the airport of a bait and switch and threatened to explore areas outside of Smithfield for expansion. But with the expansion plan scrapped, Blue Line says it will put the 14 acres up for sale and expand elsewhere. And finally, Carey firm bullish on Sanford. NC Industrial Holdings LLC purchased 7.25 acres in Sanford for $4 million, according to a deed filed March 3rd. Part of the purchase was for an industrial property at 2903 Lee Avenue, and another part of the purchase was for a vacant 3 acres across the street. The buyer is an investment group pulled together by Grant Neer, a partner and broker at Monumental Property Group out of Carey. We plan on holding the assets long term because we feel there is a shortage of warehouse in this market and construction costs have created significant barriers of entry, Neer says. At some point, we will utilize the vacant land to add more industrial, which fits nicely within this corridor. And now we turn to the On Retail Restaurants page, written by Laura Brumette. Walmart, Harris Teeter, lead turf wars, grocery numbers show the rising fight for consumer dollars. The Triangle's grocery market continued to gain steam in 2022 as sales approached $8 billion. The region's growing appetite for a wide variety of grocery stores is fueling sales despite inflation. Key players in the market held fast in 2022, but this year could bring change as competition heats up. Last year, Walmart once again claimed the top spot in the Raleigh Metro with 21.7% of the market share, but Matthews-based Harris Teeter was close behind with 20.2%, according to data obtained from Chain Store Guide. In the data, the Raleigh Metro includes Wake, Johnston, and Franklin counties. In the Durham-Chapel Hill Metro, including Chatham, Durham, Orange, and Person counties, Harris Teeter led the pack with 27.5% of the market share. Walmart followed with 22.3%. Salisbury-based Food Lion held the third spot in both metros with around 14.5% of the market share. Wegmans, the recent newcomer from New York, appeared on the Triangle's data set for the first time last year and managed to take a sizable chunk of the local market. Despite having just four stores in the region, Wegmans had the fourth highest market share in Raleigh and fifth in Durham-Chapel Hill. But the brand appears to have hit pause on more expansion in the region. Wegmans canceled its plans for a second carry store at the Fenton development. A Holly Springs location was announced years ago, but no dirt has moved at the site. Publix, another outsider that recently moved into the local market, falls further down the list, but that could change in the coming years as the Florida grocer has been on a spree of opening new stores, including in Durham. In total, Triangle residents spent $7.86 billion at grocery stores in 2022. Walmart and Harris Teeter each saw more than $1 billion in sales in the Raleigh Metro, with about $430,000 and $530,000 in Durham-Chapel Hill in the Durham-Chapel Hill Metro, respectively. New rooftop bar adds to buzz at Carey's Fenton. AVA Rooftop Bar is bringing Mediterranean bites and cocktails to Fenton. Opening April 7, AVA is located on the rooftop of the two-story building at 301 Fenton Gateway Drive in Cary. Sports and Social fills the entire first floor and a portion of the second floor of the building. PBR Cowboy Bar fills out the rest of the second floor. Live, Hospitality, and Entertainment is behind all three concepts. The Rooftop Bar is a new concept for the brand. It will serve small plates created by the executive chef of the Sports and Social chain, James Beard Award nominee John Sully. The bar's menu will feature cocktails, wine, and beer. And finally, there's a new hotel plan near Raleigh Mall. A new hotel is in the works near Triangle Town Center Mall in Raleigh. The hotel is planned by Raleigh's Concord Hospitality. The company filed site plans with the city for the project, which calls for an extended stay hotel under the WoodSpring Suites brand, according to filings. The brand, formerly known as Value Place, is known for offering lower room rates. Plans call for 125 rooms in a four-story building at 6420 Capitol Boulevard. The lot, a large portion of which sits at the corner of Town Center Drive and Triangle Town Boulevard, is currently vacant and spans 15.42 acres. The site is zoned for commercial development up to five stories. And now we turn to the page written by Zach Ezone on healthcare and higher education. Ingram made lasting impact on Triangle. Glaxo leader was key advocate for pharma biotech industries. The Triangle lost one of the most influential figures in the local life sciences industry when Robert Ingram died March 24. Ingram, 80, began a long career in pharmaceuticals as a sales representative and moved up through the ranks until becoming CEO of Glaxo Welcome. In this role, he helped lead a merger that led to the formation of the global pharma company GlaxoSmithKline. Glaxo's growth in the Triangle brought attention to the area as a biotech cluster, says Joel Marcus, executive chairman and founder of Alexandria Real Estate Equities. Marcus knew Ingram for decades after first meeting him while Marcus was a lawyer involved in the biotech industry. He credits Ingram as an innovator, thought leader, and lifesaver, referring to the lives saved by Glaxo's AIDS treatments. He had more to do with the Triangle becoming a life science cluster than any other person or company, Marcus says. After a career as a pharma executive, Ingram joined the Durham venture capital group, Hatteras Venture Partners, initially in 2003 as a member of the business advisory board and later as general partner. Clay Thorpe, Hatteras' general partner, says Ingram arguably had more of an impact on the pharma and biotech industries in North Carolina and perhaps the Southeast or the entire country than anyone. When Ingram joined Hatteras, it lent credibility to the firm, helping it to grow and invest in life sciences companies over the last 17 years. We see Hatteras as one of the many legacies that Bob will have left, Thorpe says. His legacy is our charge. With Hatteras, Ingram continued to support the Triangle's life sciences industry by guiding investments into local companies and serving on various boards, including Durham pharmaceutical company Novan. Most recently, Ingram was chairman of the board of directors for BioCryst Pharmaceuticals. He had served on the company's board since 2015, during which time he helped the company move forward a treatment that received approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in late 2020. Morrisville Life Sciences firm completes another deal. Fresh off an acquisition in February, a Morrisville company has pulled off another deal. Kai Mannix, a consulting firm focused on the life sciences industry, has acquired Agilis Consulting Group, which is headquartered in Cincinnati, and lists more than 20 team members on its website. Financial details were not released. With the Agilis team, Kai Mannix is extending its human factors capabilities. In 2021, the company began building out an internal human factors process while keeping a watch on potential acquisition targets. Kai Mannix and Agilis built a relationship, which led to a deal that moved from a letter of intent to closing in about 30 days, according to Kai Mannix CEO Stephen Perry. Perry says Kai Mannix was established on the premise that the life sciences industry needed an end-to-end solutions provider. Founded in 2004, its 2021 revenue was above $30 million. The company is now at about 330 employees, with about 120 people local to the Triangle. Last year, the company was a Triangle Business Journal Fast 50 award winner. And finally, Raleigh Pharma cuts half its workforce. 9 Meters Biopharma has slashed its headcount as it tries to extend its cash runway in a challenging financial environment for many small pharma and biotech companies. The company's board of directors on March 23 approved cuts to 11 full-time employees plus 8 consultants and contractors, according to a 10-K filed with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. We believe these changes will provide operating efficiencies for us to continue to support our product development programs, as well as any potential partnerships, collaborations, or other strategic relationships we may enter into, the company said in the filing. And now we turn to On Real Estate, written by Kaylee Thompson. Ambitious creamery project now paused. New York firm has plans for 2 towers rising 32 and 20 stories. A benchmark development project in Glenwood South may be on hold with no restart date in sight. Indications from the city of Raleigh and retail tenants indicate the Creamery development project by Turnbridge Equities is on hold. Raleigh city planning officials say the city's water department in December put a public utility hold that stops any site permits from being issued. Notes on the project indicate that the cost of replacement of sanitary sewer needs to be calculated and paid before any permits can be issued. The Creamery project received site plan approval in mid-2022. Turnbridge Equities out of New York City plans to build a 32-story residential tower and a 20-story office tower totaling 976,000 square feet of mixed-use space. Plans also call for preserving at least part of the Creamery building, while the properties at 410 and 400 Glenwood Avenue would be demolished. Turnbridge Equities Managing Director Jason Davis in a statement says, "We're working to design a best-in-class development that meets the current needs of the market, so we're taking the necessary extra time to address changes we've seen with how people use space before beginning construction." With a delay, retail tenants are getting a slight reprieve from having to find new space. Property manager Reed Jones with Michaels and Jones Properties says they notified the tenants in December that leases would be extended through June. Jones says he hasn't heard anything from Turnbridge since December. John Fletcher, REMAX real estate broker in charge at the office at 410 Glenwood Avenue, says they were told in December that the project was delayed. Remy Fullwood, owner of Jawbreaker Boxing in the Creamery building, says he was told in December that he could stay in the space, but he had already signed a lease for another space, but at a higher monthly rate. Jones says Michaels and Jones Properties initially gave the tenants a move-out deadline of Labor Day 2022, as Turnbridge was looking to break ground in late 2022 with an anticipated completion of 2024. However, as Labor Day approached, the company realized it wasn't going to happen that soon, so they updated the tenants. The next update in December was about the delay. There have been no updates since. Turnbridge Equities is also behind the Seaboard train station project, which received zoning approval in September for up to 20 stories, but with strict conditions to preserve the train station. No work has begun on that project yet either. Investor grows RTP holdings to 700,000 square feet. A real estate investment firm has completed another piece of an expansion in Research Triangle Park. Toronto's Oxford Properties acquired the site for a new biomanufacturing facility at 78 TW Alexander Drive from Davidson Craven in November for $21.4 million, according to Durham County deed records. The 95,500-square-foot building was recently completed. The building is on a 14.6-acre site and has expansion capabilities up to 190,500 square feet. The expansion can be a second floor for office or research and development space. The building has 36-foot clear heights, 7 loading docks, and the flexibility to accommodate tenants with varied needs. The acquisition brings Oxford Properties ownership in RTP to more than 700,000 square feet with the intent to create a fully end-to-end life sciences campus. And finally, prime land near Carolina CC hits the market. One of the few remaining parcels inside the Beltline between St. Mary Street and White Oak Road is for sale. Trademark Properties has listed the property at 2710 Toxie Drive in Raleigh as unpriced. Redfin shows a price of $11.9 million. The property is just east of the Carolina Country Club. The site is a collection of five parcels on Toxie Drive, totaling 9.64 acres. The sites are zoned R2 and R4 for residential development. Trademark Properties President Amy Carroll says there has been a significant amount of interest, but the land crosses a stream, meaning a significant amount of time and money would go into engineering and permitting. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. Those with disabilities get a boost. The Triangle has no shortage of great events for great causes, and one coming up in May is the Casino Night for the Alliance of Disability Advocates. The second Casino Night will be at Bowstring Pizza and Brew Yard on May 18 from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Alliance of Disability Advocates is a nonprofit that helps people with disabilities live in communities how and where they want. Alliance provides free services to those with diabetes in Wake, Durham, Johnston, Orange, and Franklin counties. Alliance is one of more than 400 federally recognized Centers for Independent Living, or CILs. CILs are community-based, cross-disability, nonprofit organizations which are designed and operated by people with disabilities. Cleft Palate Association to gather in Raleigh. A national organization that is based in Chapel Hill is celebrating its 80th year of serving those born with cleft palates at its annual convention that begins May 2nd. The American Cleft Palate Craniofacial Organization will hold its annual meeting starting May 2nd at the Raleigh Convention Center, with Belfour Industries CEO Sheldon Yellen serving as keynote speaker. The meeting will bring together more than 1,000 providers from around the world and a gala that celebrates professionals and scholarship winners. The ACPA holds its annual meeting across the country, but this one will be local. The 501c3 serves individual and healthcare professionals looking to help those affected by cleft and craniofacial conditions. It was founded in 1943 and has a staff of 7 and an annual budget of around $1.6 million. Methodist Home gets $1 million gift for scholarship fund. The Methodist Home for Children has received a gift of $1 million from a longtime benefactor, Bob Jordan, who was also lieutenant governor and a state senator. He died in 2020 at the age of 87. The gift now fully endows the Sarah Cole Jordan Fund for Early Childhood, which provides scholarships for underserved children and honors his wife, Sarah. The Jordan Child and Family Enrichment Center opened on the Methodist Home campus in 2001. Fayetteville State receives grants for entrepreneurship. Fayetteville State University has received two grants totaling $164,000 to support entrepreneurship. The NC IDEA Black Entrepreneurship Council gave $150,000 to provide education and resources to regional entrepreneurs and students through innovative curricula and wraparound services. The new set of online adaptive courses are flexible and low to no cost to help students and others. We have a number of students with entrepreneurial aspirations who are not necessarily business majors, said Caroline Glacken, Fayetteville State's Director of Innovation, Entrepreneurship, and Economic Empowerment. However, their comprehensive majors don't have sufficient free electives to pursue entrepreneurship. And finally, Carey Company delivers in 2022. Chiesi USA Incorporated, a Carey-based pharmaceutical company, contributed more than $830,000 in 2022 through its community program. Close to 200 employees supported 65 charities. With a focus on local children and families, Chiesi in the Community, or CITC, contributed to the Interfaith Food Shuttle, Activate Good, Children's Flight of Hope, and Refugee Hope Partners. Some came from a partnership with the Durham Bulls, in which Chiesi donated for every home strikeout by the Bulls. Chiesi also hosted a Salvation Army Angel Tree, worked with the Ronald McDonald House of Durham and Wake. Partnering with local organizations is a top priority because it means taking care of the people who live and work around us, our neighbors, said John Zwinski, CEO of Chiesi USA. And now we'll read some of the big numbers that are sprinkled in sections throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first big number, 17,200. That's how many passengers flew between Raleigh-Durham International Airport and Kansas City, Missouri, through just the third quarter of last year, including 7,000 on Southwest Airlines. Given the demand, Southwest is bringing back its nonstop flight between RDU and Kansas City in June. And the next big number is actually a percent, 27%, the percentage of growth the Hispanic population alone has accounted for in Johnston County the last two decades. And next is $1,000. That's how much a hotel room costs for one night in Raleigh the weekend of April 1st and 2nd. Almost all of the city's hotels were sold out thanks to the Dreamville Festival, and rooms that were available fetched high prices. The music festival brought in 50,000 attendees on each of its 2 days. And our next big number is $15 million. Renovion, a small pharmaceutical company in Chapel Hill, has landed a raise that will help it advance multiple clinical programs focused on pulmonary diseases. And next is 254. That's the number of multifamily units for the planned Morrisville Town Center to be developed by Singh Development. The town is eyeing summer 2024 to start construction. And now we'll read some of the quotes sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal in sections called He Said It. The first one is from Brian Reed, market leader for Town Bank, on the accessibility of smaller banks. As tech companies evaluate their options after the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank of New York, small and mid-sized banks say they're seeing opportunities. That's our strength. If you want to call the market president, my cell phone is out there. And next is Clayton Town Councilor Michael Sims on why he voted to reject plans for a new apartment complex on North O'Neill Street. He and other councilors were concerned about traffic on the street and rejected the project. It's a matter of how much traffic we can continue to put on that street. And next is Matt Gladick on his new role of recruiting economic development projects to Durham. Gladick, formerly head of the Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, is now the vice president of economic development at the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce. There's still a long list of companies that we've been courting that we're waiting to hear decisions on. Next is Raj Bhandari, owner of Carey's Science6, on the company being named 2023 Small Business Exporter of the Year by the U.S. Small Business Administration. When I came from Nepal 19 years ago, I never dreamed of being a business owner. Now I own a business that has been recognized by the SBA. It's a blessing for me and my family. And finally, Mark Vintner, chief economist at Piedmont Crescent Capital in Charlotte. We're in the midst of a rolling recessions, and those rolling recessions began in the tech sector. They've spread to housing and commercial real estate, and now more recently, they spread to the financial sector. And typically, when that happens, the entire economy slows. And we'll end on the Viewpoint page that has a guest column this week, written by Jim Kane, a lawyer at the Kilpatrick Townsend Law Firm, served as president of the Carolina Hurricanes from 1999 to 2003. The headline, All Kaniacs Should Know the Ingram Legacy. He may never have laced on a pair of skates or sold a ticket at the box office, but Bob Ingram did more in the early days to build the Carolina Hurricanes' success than just about anyone. The Canes played their first game in Raleigh's new arena in the fall of 1999. The attendance that season did not set any records. In fact, was the worst in the league. The team lost millions of dollars, as unlike in many communities that strive for a professional sports team, the Triangle did not have to make ticket commitments or sign sponsorship contracts for the team to move here. Not everyone saw the potential for professional sports in our market back in those days. Bob Ingram did. Hailing from the Midwest, Bob, like many of us at the time, probably didn't know much about hockey, but he did know the role the newly arrived sports team could play in bringing together a region that, for generations, had been driven by rivalries of geography and college sports loyalty. He had the ear and confidence of presidents, governors, university leaders, and corporate CEOs, and didn't hesitate to call on them. In the spring of 2001, Bob stepped forward to lead the Friends of the Canes, an organization of community leaders committed to making the team a success. Along with his good friend, Jim Goodman, Bob convinced a group of Triangle business leaders to travel on the Canes' team plane to the NHL All-Star Game in Denver. During that trip, with Bob's leadership, we got the business leaders to buy into our All-Star Crusade, a campaign to earn the right to host an All-Star game. In front of those business leaders, National Hockey League Commissioner Gary Bettman committed that if we could reach our goal, he would bring the All-Star game to the Triangle. To do this, we would need to double our season ticket base from 6,000 to 12,000. Bob led the charge, arranging and attending countless one-on-one and group meetings with business leaders. He solicited their support for ticket purchases and sponsorship commitments and helped facilitate partnerships for the Canes with university presidents and athletic directors. He even helped us get Mike Krzyzewski to join his fellow area coaches in an endorsement of our efforts. Ultimately, the All-Star Crusade was a success. The Canes doubled their season ticket base, enlisted scores of new corporate sponsors, and earned the right to host the All-Star game. The effort would put the team on a stable financial footing and expose more fans to the exciting atmosphere of the loudest arena in the NHL. The fan base has remained solid and faithful ever since, and the Hurricanes have become an inseparable part of the Triangle community. Others will memorialize Bob Ingram's legacy and our life sciences ecosystem, our philanthropic spirit, and the vibrance of our venture capital sector, but as we celebrate the Hurricanes' 25th season, every Canes fan should know the impact that his passion and commitment had on the legacy of success of our beloved team. Speaking for all Caniacs, thank you, Bob, and go Canes. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.